So today we're coming to the end of our season of looking back and looking up and looking forward. And it's been great just to have these few weeks just to pause, to take stock of things and reimagine the future and to spend some time together just seeking God for the next few years. A process maybe of trying to realign ourselves and refocus ourselves as we continue on this journey together as God's people. So we're going to look at the last part of Joshua that we've got in this series, which is Joshua 5 in a moment. So you might want to grab your Bibles. But I'm just going to give you a quick summary for those that have jumped in and out of the series, just so that we're all on the same page. So it's just a reminder that we've got to a point in the life of the Jewish people where they've just started to enter the promised land, this amazing promise that God gave them as a people several generations before, that they were going to go into this land that would have milk and honey and it would be their space and their place. Before that, they'd been wandering in the desert for 40 years and they got to the point now, leadership had passed from Moses to Joshua. They were on the edge of beginning to move into something new, something potentially really big. And it was a significant time of transition. And that's one of the reasons why I picked these particular chapters over the last few weeks for us to look at. Because I think it's a really helpful insight into a community of God's people that have moved, are on a journey, but they were continuing like the next chapter that God had for them. And it's just really interesting to see how they went about the change and the transition and how God moved at that point in their history and their season. So they had this time of looking back, and Moses, we spent some time right at the beginning with Moses, looking back over all that God had done amongst them, and that was the end of his part in the plan. And then this was this kind of handing over to Joshua and all that meant. But there was certainly something around that of giving thanks to God for all that he'd done with them up to that point. Then we looked at a block of looking up to God, coming before him, recognizing his sovereignty, his power, and seeking God for guidance. And that's there at the beginning of Joshua, if you read the first couple of chapters there. And then we jumped in at this looking forward bit. They're all about to move forward. They physically move across the Jordan, if you remember the story that we followed with our Abraham. He took us as we crossed the Jordan. And there's definitely a sense of risk-taking at this point, not knowing what lies ahead. But do you remember there was that bit where God instructed them to lift up the stones from the riverbed and take it forward and make a marker point so that future generations could look back and remember all that God had done at that point in their history? So God's people are definitely on a journey. I'm sure this point in their life was quite stretching for them. There must have been points when they didn't quite know what was going on. Maybe times when they were frightened about what lay ahead, and also sometimes they needed to be reminded what God had already done so that they could hold on to what God was going to do for them in the future. So what happens next? It's an interesting bit. This is just before, for some of you that know your history, this is just before they take Jericho, that interesting story, that lovely story that we often do when we're in Sunday school. This is the point that we come into the story. They behave in quite an interesting way at this point because they're organising themselves. They're preparing to take Jericho in this chapter, but instead they behave in quite an interesting way. And God instructs them something that's quite unusual for a community to do that's just about to go into battle and to take the land before them. So we're going to have a look at that now. We're going to read Joshua 5, verses 1 to 12. And you'll see what I mean when I read it to you. Now, when all the Amorite kings west of the Jordan and all the Canaanite kings along the coast heard how the Lord had dried up the Jordan before the Israelites until they crossed over, Their hearts melted in fear, and they no longer had the courage to face the Israelites. At that time, the Lord said to Joshua, "Make flint knives and circumcise the Israelites again." So Joshua made flint knives and circumcised the Israelites at Gibbath Haraloth. Now this is why he did so. All those who came out of Egypt, all the men of military age, died in the wilderness on the way after leaving Egypt. All the people that had come out had been circumcised, but all the people born in the wilderness during the journey from Egypt had not. The Israelites had moved about in the wilderness for 40 years until all the men who were of military age when they left Egypt had died, since they had not obeyed the Lord. For the Lord had sworn to them that they would not see the land that he had solemnly promised their ancestors to give us, a land flowing with milk and honey. So he raised up their sons in their place, and these were the ones Joshua circumcised. They were still uncircumcised because they had not been circumcised on the way. He's really emphasising this point, isn't he? It's quite interesting. And after the whole nation had been circumcised, they remained there in the camp until they were healed. Then the Lord said to Joshua, "Today I have rolled away the reproach of Egypt from you, so the place has been called Gilgath to this day. On the evening of the 14th day of the month, while camped at Gilgath on the plains of Jericho, the Israelites celebrated the Passover. The day after the Passover, the very day, they ate some of the produce of the land, unleavened bread and roasted grain. The manna stopped the day after they ate this food from the land. There was no longer any manna for the Israelites, but that year they ate the produce of Canaan." So an interesting chapter to finish our series on, isn't it? And I think there's three challenges in there which are really helpful for us to hear today as we go through this final part of just thinking about the future. There's some fascinating insights that we can gain about God's people at this point before they move fully into the calling as a nation that God had called them. And I just wanted to share three points with you. It's a nice traditional sermon this morning that I think are really helpful for us. And they're three questions that I'm going to give you before we move into a time of communion. So the first thing I noticed was that there was something that was tangibly different that had come over the Israelites as they came out of the desert. I don't know if you noticed this at the beginning. During the desert, they'd been a people that had come from slavery. They were slaves. They were people that were also frightened. They weren't organised. They didn't really have a sense of community together. But something had happened to them during this time. There'd been wrestles with God, and the older generation had kind of not really hit the mark, and there was consequences for them. But essentially, something significant had changed for them as they came out of the desert and into the promised land. And do you know what? The other nations noticed. We saw that right at the beginning of this text that we've just looked at. They noticed that they were a people who were strong and determined. They noticed that they were a people who worshipped God, who had gone before them and kept them safe and done this miraculous event of them crossing the Jordan. They became a people that were no longer fearful themselves to a group of people that were actually feared by others. Isn't that interesting, the whole change that had happened to them as God's people? You notice this kind of shift in attitude, like the whole psychology of the community had changed. There was something in there that they confidently held on to God, and others noticed, and it made an impact on the way they treated and interacted with God's people. The other interesting thing about this is that a generation had to die for a new generation to come up. And this newer generation were different because there was something in them about them being prepared to take risks and trusting God. And also there's a sense of them really grasping the significance of what they're doing and the sovereignty and the glory of God, because they recommit themselves, as we see as we read through the chapter, which is represented by circumcision. You could call them maybe a generation on fire and ready to serve. Isn't it wonderful to see the difference that's happened in God's people during this time? You know, God was working through the older generation and into the new generation and forming them ready for the next chapter in the history of their people. So this was my first challenge to us, the first question. Are we a desert or are we a new land generation at this point in our church history? Are we ready to step forward into a new landscape as a church, just like God's people had done, not really knowing what lies ahead? They didn't know what was going to be there for them as they stood on the border, as they moved across the river. Are we people who are ready to step into an unknown future that's required of us? Because things have changed radically. We had some really interesting conversations in our small group the other week about how church and experiencing church is, for many of you, has significantly changed throughout your lifetime. And as you stand in your life now and you look back, you can see some significant differences about what it means to come to church, the way that we do church. Because some of that is because the culture around us has changed. We no longer live in a Christian society. We live in a society that's secular. And in many ways, the church has declined in this country. The future is unknown. And we stand on a border and we look forward as a church, and the terrain is very different to what we have been through in the past. And I think that's something that we just need to be able to grasp. We need to see the difference, and we need to seek God around what does that look like as we move forward into this new terrain. There's going to be risk about it. We're not going to necessarily know what the future holds for us. But that's what God's people were facing at this point. And they stepped forward in faith and confidence. And there was a real confidence that came out of them that other people noticed. And I think that's really helpful for us to notice from the passage today. So are we a desert generation or are we a new land generation? That's my first question. God then instructed them to do something really interesting as a community. They're getting ready to go into a battle. And at that point, he calls his people, this new generation, to recommit themselves again, this generation's opportunity to say, we stand for God. And he does this extraordinary thing where he suggests or instructs that all the males in the community need to be circumcised. Well, when I looked at this, I thought, it is quite extraordinary at this point, isn't it, for God to suggest this, because as a people, they're extremely vulnerable at this stage. They're going into a land that's unknown. They could be attacked at any point by the tribes there. And if you circumcise all your fighting men and put them out of action for quite a few days, that's quite a significant thing, a vulnerable thing, isn't it, that God's calling them to do. But they did it. This generation did it. There's a sense of trust in there again, I think, for them believing God has asked them to do it. They were called by God to have this physical external symbol of being God's people. They grasp this opportunity to embrace this identity of God's people and their commitment to God. And they did something that the previous generation had failed to do. They actually grasped hold of the covenant relationship that they had with God. For some reason, the desert generation had not followed through on what God had asked them to do. And it took this generation to stand up and say, no, this is our time. We are God's people. And he's asking us to do this. They were prepared to be a people who were distinct and set apart. And in that picture, you see this idea of a whole community coming together with a sort of shared vision of who they are and a shared way of doing life and doing faith. They were fully signed up. You have to be fully signed up to do this, don't you? I say this as a woman, not looking at the men, but this is quite a significant thing to do, isn't it, as a whole generation. And that's something which really spoke to me. Because, you know what, we're people of the covenant too. Abraham spoke about this when he preached recently. We're people of the new covenant, and it isn't demonstrated, as Abraham pointed out to us, by external marks on our body. It's in the heart of every man and woman. It's in our hearts. It's written in our hearts that we are God's people. And that means that we join in this wonderful transforming relationship that God has with human beings. And this new covenant that we're part of, it's a beautiful gift that's given to us. It's characterised by grace. It's something we don't deserve. It's characterised by forgiveness. So all the mess that we've made is sorted out. And it's also characterised by us being filled with the Spirit of God, who brings us strength. It's an amazing covenant that we're part of, the new covenant. It was bought at great price by Jesus' death on the cross. And it's an amazing gift that we have. Romans tells us that this gift is given to us through Jesus, and it allows us full access to God by faith. Isn't that amazing that we too join in with the new covenant? Not something that's external, that's for men only. This is a covenant that's for all of us, that's on our hearts and brings us into that relationship with God again. Like God's people, we are moving forward into the promised land that God has instructed his people. And we have this gift of covenant. We are the generations of the covenant. And we're called, like God's people here in this story, to be committed to God, to follow his ways and his purposes. Do we really believe in this commission that God has given to us? Do we take this commitment seriously? Does it define our identity and our purpose as God's people? And are we ready to do his will? So that's my second question to us. Are we living as new covenant people? Are we prepared to stand up and identify ourselves with God the Creator, part of his people, relationship with him? One more thing that I also noticed, and I don't know if anyone else noticed this in this passage, and I just wanted to share it with you. This is my third point and my third question. As we get to the right at the end of this passage, you'll notice that the Israelites, as well as going through this whole circumcision rite, which would have lasted for several days and taken ages for the men to heal, at the end of that point, they then celebrated Passover. I don't know if you noticed that at the end, which is this annual event that the Jewish nation, Jewish people, still celebrate today. And we join in with at Easter. And it's also represented, it's layered into our communion story as well. This amazing story would have reminded them of the deliverance that they had as slaves from Egypt, that God had rescued them, and that he was with them. And it's a story that points to the coming of Jesus, the Passover lamb for us. As we read the story ourselves now, we can see that layer. We've got that insight now that as we look at this story of Passover, we know that it was a promise that was there for us as well. But something else happened during that Passover. The Israelites started to eat produce from the new land. And God's daily provision that he gave them for 40 years, he was sending them daily manna. You know, that lovely story of the manna coming. It stopped. I don't know if anyone noticed that little bit of detail at the end. And I find this last bit of the story really fascinating. You see, God's provision changed as they moved into a new era. It was God's plan. And as they moved forward, he started to provide in a different way. It didn't stop, so the manna stopped, but it was replaced by the blessings and the food and the wine and all the good produce from the land. So God's faithfulness, his provision continued, but the way that it was provided, it changed, it stopped, and a new way started. You see, God's people, they didn't need manna anymore. God provided them with the produce from Canaan. So it's really interesting, isn't it, that the faithfulness of God was there still, his provision was still there, but the way that he provided, it changed. And I wonder sometimes as God's people whether we have an expectation of constant manna. And what do I mean by that? Well, I wonder as if God's provision that he's given to us over many years, as we look back, do we expect it to keep being the same all the time? Are we ready for God to provide for us and to change the way he gives his provision to us in a different way? And are we anticipating this? You see, his faithfulness to us as the church will not change. He's faithful to us, and he's been faithful to us for many, many years in this place. But sometimes as we move into new chapters and new challenges that he takes us forward, the way he provides will change. Are we ready for that? Are we grasping for manna when we should be enjoying new expressions of God's provision and work amongst us? So those are my three questions. I'm going to leave you. I'm going to remind you what they were again. Are we desert or new land people? Are we really living in a committed way as an identity of people that are under a new covenant with God? Are we prepared to take the risk and the commitment and grasp the identity, the vision together that God's people did? So that's the second question. Are we living as new covenant people? And the third one was this question around, are we still grasping for manna from the past when we should be enjoying new expressions of God's provision and work amongst us? So I'll leave you to ponder on those into the next week ahead. Before we finish this part of the service, I just wanted to give us one more opportunity. We've done this throughout the last few weeks, but just to turn to those around you.